will, turn to the book of Proverbs. For the most part, we'll be in the book of Proverbs this evening. We're going to start Proverbs chapter 1. This is a book of general truths and general warnings. And when you see a title like How to Spot a Fool, you may think, does he have somebody in particular in mind with this sermon? And the truth is, yes, me. Because unfortunately, I have been a fool far more than I'd care to admit. And it's easy to fall into it. It's easy to get caught up in foolishness. There are a great many number of fools walking around us in this world, and most of them don't know it. So let's just start with the question, well, what is a fool? Who is a fool? I think there are two ways of looking at it, and I think the wisdom literature addresses both. The first one is one who lacks wisdom. This would also be someone who is inexperienced, someone who is ignorant. A lot of times, you'll see it in Proverbs as well as other places, the young man. He just doesn't have the knowledge that he should, and in that sense, he lacks wisdom, he is a fool. There's another sense that is much more dangerous. That's the one who despises wisdom. He could have it. He could have learned from his experiences, but he chooses not to. He chooses to reject the instruction of God. And this is the one, for the most part, we're going to be dealing with tonight. One who despises and rejects the teachings of God. Proverbs 1 verse 7 says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction." If knowledge begins with that fear of the Lord, obviously knowledge can't be had by those who will push it away. And that's what we're going to be talking about this evening. Clear-cut distinction between the wise and the foolish. The wise are those who love God's ways. They look to God's ways. They want to study them and learn them more and practice them. Fools just don't care what God has to say. They want to do things their own way. So tonight, let's look at five different categories where a fool's foolishness really stands out. And the first one is the way a fool speaks. Proverbs 15. I'm going to have most of these up here for you, but feel free and please turn if you would like as well. This is Proverbs 15, verse 2. "The tongue of the wise uses knowledge rightly, but the mouth of fools pours forth foolishness." The tongue is an instrument that some people are not talented playing. It's dangerous, and we see that. James talks about how incredibly dangerous the tongue can be. Same chapter, drop down to verse 28. Have it up here for you as well. "The heart of the righteous studies how to answer, but the mouth of the wicked pours forth evil." You see the two focus words there, studies and pours. The righteous, the wise, and I believe those are synonymous in these two. The righteous studies. Before he comes out and says an answer, gives his response, he weighs it. He thinks about what he's going to say before he says it. Well, what does the fool do? What does the evil do? He just lets it rip. Just pour it on out. Just dumps everything that's on his mind right out there without giving it any second thought at all. The mouth of the fool gushes. And even if he doesn't know what he's talking about, he's still talking. This is a major difference between him and the wise. Proverbs 10. We're going to go through a lot of these tonight, by the way. Verse 19. "In the multitude of words, sin is not lacking, but he who restrains his lips is wise." And then verse 20 along with it, "The tongue of the righteous is choice silver. The heart of the wicked is worth little." God gave us two ears and one mouth. Do we use them in that proportion, in that ratio? "The tongue of a righteous man," verse 20, "is like choice silver." It's precious. It's worthy. Have you ever thought about what makes gold and silver precious? They're rare. Right? If all of us had our front yard covered with gold and silver, would it be that valuable if everybody had it? Now, the reason it's so valuable, those metals are so precious, is because they're rare. I think there's a point here. When the wise speaks, someone you know who possesses a lot of wisdom, what do you do when he opens his mouth, when she opens her mouth? You listen. You listen, because they're not just going on and on and on all the time. When they speak, we know it's something powerful. We know those words have value. Chapter 18, verse 13. "He who answers a matter before he hears it, it is folly and ashamed to him. Chapter 29 with it, verse 20. Do you see a man hasty in his words? There's more hope for a fool than for him. So here you have a fool being compared to a man hasty in his words. The man who speaks before he thinks is like a super fool. He's even worse than a regular fool. It's better to have a small IQ than a big mouth. Can you go to heaven with low intelligence? Yeah, you can. You don't have to be brilliant to go to heaven. Can you be a godly person and not be a genius? Yeah. Think about the wise people you know. How many of them would you say are big mouths that just don't know when to shut it off, just don't know when to keep it closed? I think I could give you a list of five people off the top of my head that I consider the wisest people I know. None of them are big mouths. None of them are just running off uncontrollably at the mouth. They weigh these things. They're not hasty in their words. The opposite of this foolish one. Proverbs 26, turn to this one. Verse 17. Remember, we're thinking about how the foolish speak. Proverbs 26, verse 17. He who passes by and meddles in a quarrel not his own is like one who takes a dog by the ears. You know, there are some people who cannot stay out of other people's business. And here you have this example. Solomon says that's like taking a dog by the ears. Can you imagine there's a sleeping pit bull in your neighborhood? And you walk by him a couple times. He's fine. He's minding his own business. He's nodding off. And then you just, that third trip by, you just decide to grab that pit bull by the side of the head and just snatch him up and hold him by the ears. Why would you do that? What's going to, how's that going to end? Well, you know, you stirred this up. You made this vicious. He may have been nice before, but you wake him like that, he's not going to be. That's exactly what happens when we put our nose into someone else's business. Now, obviously, we got to apply wisdom to this. Are there times where we need to speak to others? Are there times when their souls are in danger? Yes. That's one thing. Digging around in other people's business is something entirely different. And I believe that's what Solomon is addressing here. We don't have to have an opinion about everyone and everything in this world. And I know in the age of social media, it's hard to swallow that. We don't have to post every thought that runs through our mind on Facebook. It's true. I know it's hard. It's hard to imagine that. We don't have to say everything. We can just be quiet sometimes. We could just sit and listen. This is one time we're going to leave Proverbs. Turn to Luke chapter 12. Do you remember when they tried to drag Jesus into a family quarrel? You remember his response? This is in Luke 12, verses 13 and 14. He is trying to teach the crowd. And in verse 13, this one guy decides to interject. And he says, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." But he said to him, "Man, who made me a judge or an arbitrator over you?" And he said to them, "Take heed and beware of covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of the things he possesses." In other words, don't drag me into this, but you all better beware of covetousness. That was really the motivation behind the guy's heart anyway, to ask for this. Proverbs 17, verse 28, "Even a fool is counted wise when he holds his peace. When he shuts his lips, he's considered perceptive." I love the New King James Version. When he shuts his mouth, people might actually think he's perceptive. He's insightful. Sometimes, I just don't need to say. Sometimes, I just need to listen. A second way that a fool really stands out, and when I'm looking in the mirror, this is another thing I can look for. The way a fool handles money will expose him for what he is. And there are two basic ways. Either with covetousness, just prizing wealth above everything else. That's the driving force of his life. Or the other extreme, just carelessness. Just absolutely sweeping through it like it doesn't matter here or there. The covetous man is greedy. He's consumed by the desire for more. The careless man is a spendthrift. He gives no thought to where it came from. He's reckless with it. So let's start with the first one, covetousness. It's a trait of fools. And I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings by saying this way, but I'm going to say it anyway, so maybe I'm the fool. Fools believe in financial security. There is no such thing. I worked in banking for 15 years, and I know what bankers tell you, but I'm going to tell you the truth. There's no such thing. We used to do investments for people, and they would come and they would say, well, I want something that's absolutely guaranteed. Give me something with FDIC insurance. And I said, well, you know, FDIC insurance is, it does back it up. And he said, well, that means it could never fail, right? I said, well, as long as the government's around, it's probably okay. Well, they didn't like that answer. That's the true answer, though. Nothing is absolutely foolproof. And I gave this example. If another country comes in and takes over this one, how much is your bank account worth? And this is the most positive sermon you've heard all month long, right? I mean, I'm not trying to do that. But if we put our trust in our money, in our wealth, and we think that's always going to be there, it's always going to save us, guys, it's not. It doesn't have that kind of power. And if I trust in it, I am going to be sorely disappointed. And somebody would say, well, you know, you're talking about a bunch of what ifs. Daniel chapter 5, when King Belshazzar woke up that morning, and he decides to throw this great party. Do you think he imagined he was going to die that night? And by the end of the night, Babylon would be no more and the Medes and Persians would rule over Babylon? I don't believe he thought that when he woke up. And I just bring that up to say situations can change rapidly. My soul needs to be right. A bank account and all of these other things, they won't save us. If I'm trusting in that, especially when judgment comes, I'm going to be sad and terribly let down. Proverbs 22, verses 1 and 2. A good name is to be chosen rather than great riches, loving favor rather than silver and gold. The rich and the poor have this in common. The Lord is the maker of them both. Rich and poor alike, they will answer to Him in that final day. No matter what we have or what we didn't have, all will stand before the Lord that day. And I like 15 verse 16. Better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure with trouble. Again, these are addressing the idea of being consumed with riches. Is it wrong to have wealth? Absolutely not. We can go through and name those who served the Lord very well, and they were wealthy on top of it. We think of Abraham a lot of times right off the bat. We think of others who had at least some level of wealth. I think of Barnabas and the things that he did with it, but they didn't trust in it. They were blessed. They were good stewards with it, but they trusted in the Lord. They feared Him. Let me just make a side point here. If we say, I got a better job, and a brother of ours says, what do you mean? I said, I'm making way more money now. And he says, man, you miss like 80% of services now. Is it better? Why is it better? Why I make more? That's not the weight of good and bad. If I'm missing out on serving the Lord, it hasn't improved. I haven't gotten a better situation out of it. So there's covetousness. Carelessness is the other extreme. This is in Proverbs 27, verses 23 and 24. Be diligent to know the state of your flocks and attend to your herds. For riches are not forever, nor does a crown endure to all generations. We need to tend to our business. We need to know what we have. We need to watch over it and know the things that are going on. You don't make a living by accident. It doesn't just accidentally happen. You have to pay attention and focus. Are we careless? Are we overextended? I used to get my hair cut in a place, a barber shop, and it had a sign on the wall that said, credit ruins good friendships. In other words, what he was saying is, if you don't have $10, don't ask me to cut your hair. You know, just take care of that before you come in. 22, verse 26. This is a warning for us. We studied Proverbs together in the young adult class, and this is one we spent some time on. Do not be one of those who shakes hands in a pledge, one of those who is surety for debts. If you have nothing with which to pay, why should he take away your bed from under you? So let's talk about what's being said there. Be wise. Be careful before you co-sign with somebody else, because when I sign that, I am agreeing that this is my responsibility just as much as it is his. And unfortunately, you get to see this working in lending. You get to see grandparents who have the very best intentions, and they sign with a grandchild, and they come in, they get the loan check, and I don't see them again for like 3 months. And you call the grandparents, and they say, "Wait, what do you mean? Why are you calling me?" "Because you're on this too. This is just as much yours as it is theirs. But no, I got this for him." But you signed with them. Be careful what you involve yourselves in, because you and I can do damage to our family by trying to help somebody else out who's not going to take care of their business. We need to be wise in these things and consider this. I remember when I was young, my parents, they used to put money back to make big purchases so they wouldn't have to finance so much. We had some other family members who lived next door. They never did that. They never considered what the bottom line was. It was always, "Just tell me what the monthly payment is." Now look, if you do it this way, it's going to cost you about 10 times what the thing's worth. "I don't care. Just tell me what the monthly payment is." And they always had the brand new thing, at least for a little while, till it got taken back. But they never learned that lesson. And it's just amazing to go, and I look back and I think, Proverbs is talking about this kind of stuff. Solomon saw the dangers in this. Be wise and be patient. Do we manage the things that we earn? "He who tills his land will have plenty of bread, but he who follows frivolousness will have poverty enough." We know what we make. We know what we can afford. Don't chase rainbows is the idea there. Be wise. Be content. Another thing about a fool is the way that a fool acts. Turn to Proverbs 14. Proverbs 14, verse 17. "A quick-tempered man acts foolishly, and a man of wicked intentions is hated." You will never hear the phrase, "I tell you, he's got a crazy temper, but he sure is wise." It'd be like saying, "Man, that hole is round, but it sure is square." I mean, those two just don't go together. If he can't control his temper, he's not a wise man. 14:27 goes with it. "He who is slow to wrath has great understanding, but he who is impulsive exalts folly." Marks of a fool. I'm going to put one more with it, and then I'll tell you a story. A fool, this is 29:11, vents all his feelings, but a wise man holds them back. Sometimes you hear people say, "I'm going to give him a piece of my mind." Most people don't have enough mind to be giving pieces away to begin with. So that's something to consider. We need to control ourselves. It's easy to lose our mind and scream and holler. That's why children do it. They don't have self-control yet. They're not mature. We don't need to behave this way. Here's an example. Friday, we were coming back from toward Gadsden. All of a sudden, traffic just stopped. I mean, you come over a hill, and it is just absolutely backed up. Trucks are stopped and all this. And we started moving down over time. We got to the top of the hill, and Sasha could look down and see what had happened. And apparently, a work truck, a big old work truck, had just hammered this other little truck. I don't know if he was at a dead standstill or what. He hit him so hard, he knocked him like over the side of a bridge and into the woods. And I don't mean against the woods. I mean into the woods. Obviously, it stopped traffic. Sasha said she saw six men carrying him out deep in the woods on a stretcher, trying to bring the guy out. There are emergency vehicles coming in and just trying to weave their way in. There was a guy two cars back who did this. About every 5 minutes, he'd get out. The emergency guys started coming up the hill. They had a big truck, and they were trying to get it out of the way so a wrecker could come in and pull the truck that was in the woods up. And I had my window down, and one of the guys, he just saw me, and he came over, and he said, "Man, it's bad." He said, it's bad shape. They're trying to get the guy out of there. We're trying to get another truck to come in from Altoona or whatever town it was over there. And he said, it's going to be a while. It's going to take a while. And we said, "Well, yeah, okay, we understand that." He makes it two cars back. Guess who gets out? He says, "Hey, what's going on?" And he told him what he told me. He said, "Man, it's really bad. It's a terrible wreck." He told him how he hit him, threw him in the trees and all of that stuff. And the guy says, "Man, are you telling me y'all can't open a lane right here and just let the rest of us through? I've got places to be." And I'd already worked on the sermon, and I was thinking, a quick-tempered man acts foolishly, and a man of wicked intentions is hated. He who is slow to wrath has great understanding, but he who is impulsive exalts folly. A fool vents all his feelings, but a wise man holds them out. I think the man two cars behind me is in the book of Proverbs. I did not tell him that. But if he listens to it on the internet, maybe he'll hear it. But, I mean, just stop for a second and think about it. That man, I hope he was okay, the guy that got hit. He very easily could have died. It was awful. And this guy's complaining about he's got places to be. Well, guess what? Everybody had places to be, but there's something more important going on right here. Control yourself. That temper. That, for me, painted a picture of what this can look like. How awful, how selfish and pathetic does it look when we can't control our anger? On the other hand, Proverbs 15:1, a soft answer turns away wrath. A harsh word stirs up anger. There are some people, now don't misunderstand this. Soft answer does not mean cowardice. It does not mean a spineless answer. You can stand for absolute truth, and you can stand unmovingly, and you can do it with a gentle voice most of the time. Steady and even and calm and still be as immovable as a mountain. You can do that, and I respect those who can. I want to be one of those that don't get caught up in the anger that so quickly comes with it. That takes real strength. He who is slow to anger is better than the mighty. He who rules his spirit than he who takes a city. Isn't that what Solomon's telling us? Control yourself. That's where that real strength and power is. Say what needs to be said, absolutely, but do it under control. Another area where a fool's foolishness plays out is in the family. We're going to look at women and men and then parents. Proverbs 14, verse 1, a wise woman builds her house, but the foolish pulls it down with her hands. Better to dwell in the wilderness than with a contentious and angry woman. Would you like to destroy your house? Just be contentious with your spouse. It'll do it. I guarantee you. It'll ruin it. Solomon warns against that. Look at 12:4. An excellent wife is the crown of her husband, but she who causes shame is like rottenness in his bones. A wife's behavior can bring shame to the whole family. But look at the first part. She can absolutely be a crown. And I always, of course, think of Proverbs 31 going with it from here. There's a woman that glorifies the Lord and builds up her family. I think of Abigail. You guys remember Abigail, the wife of Nabal? Nabal's name means fool, and he absolutely earned it. His mother named him well, if that was his real name. But Abigail was so wise in dealing with David. She was calm, and she was careful, and she was apologizing for things she didn't even do wrong. She was wise. That soft answer turns away wrath. Solomon's not just talking here. Did Abigail's soft answer turn away wrath that day when David and his men are buckling on swords and they're about to go kill every male in Nabal's household? This stuff is real. This is day to day for us. We need more wives like Abigail. Turn to Proverbs 6. I want to read this section together. Wives, be wise. But now let's move on. Let's talk about husbands. The world needs husbands who are faithful. Proverbs 6, let's start in 23. Well, let's start in 20 just to set the whole section up. My son, keep your father's command. Do not forsake the law of your mother. Bind them continually upon your heart. Tie them around your neck. When you roam, they will lead you. When you sleep, they will keep you. And when you awake, they will speak with you. For the commandment is a lamp and the law is light. Reproofs of instruction are the way of life. To keep you from the evil woman, from the flattering tongue of the seductress, do not lust after her beauty in your heart, nor let her allure you with her eyelids. For by means of a harlot, a man is reduced to a crust of bread, and an adulteress will prey upon his precious life. These last three. Can a man take fire to his bosom and his clothes not be burned? Well, what's the answer to that? You're walking around with fire, and you hold it close to your shirt. What's going to happen? It's going to catch fire. You can't carry fire around and think it's going to be all right. And then the next one, can one walk on hot coals and his feet not be seared? I know you go to some tropical island, there are people who do that, but they're crazy. This is talking about normal people. You don't normally walk on hot coals and it's okay. It burns. You can't play with fire and expect it not to burn you. It will. It always will. Verse 29, so is he who goes into his neighbor's wife. Whoever touches her shall not be innocent. Let's just call it what it is. Men who give in to the allure of lust will lose everything in this life. They will lose respect. They will lose their families. They will lose, very likely, their living and the things that they work for. And more important than all of that stuff, they will lose their souls if they don't fix it. Guys, there are enough fools out there. Let's not add to their number. Be pure. Be pillars. Be what's right. Revelation 3, verse 12, we won't turn there, but it talks about pillars. That's what our family needs us to be. Those strong columns that held up the roof. Not rotten wood. We need to be strong and solid and dependable and faithful. The Lord expects that. Our families need that. Husbands, be pillars. Wives, be wise. And then Proverbs 29:15. Speaking to parents, the rod and rebuke give wisdom, but a child left to himself brings shame to his mother. If children could raise themselves, God wouldn't have given them to parents. We're needed. And it's a lifetime job. Correction and rebuke are necessary. This also applies if our children become the center of our world. They can become the rulers of our household. I love my kids. I do. You know I do. But they are not in charge of our lives. God is. And I have to make sure they understand that they're not in charge of our lives. I'll ruin them if I fail to make that clear to them. Well, look at verse 17. I don't have it up here for you. So Proverbs 29, verse 17. Here's the opposite. When that correction comes and it's heeded, correct your son and he will give you rest. Yes, he will give delight to your soul. There's the other side of it. Well, let's finish up with this. A look at priorities. The wise versus the priorities of the fool. Proverbs 1:7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. That's what we began with. So the difference here is those who fear God, they understand. That's where real knowledge begins. Those who reject him, they'll never have that knowledge. They reject its very source. Proverbs 8:13, the fear of the Lord is to hate evil. Pride and arrogance in the evil way and the perverse mouth I hate. It's not to dislike evil. It's not to say, man, I know that's wrong. It's to hate evil. And here's a question that I have to, and I need to ask myself every day. Do I hate evil? Because I can admit that it's wrong. And I could say, okay, I'm not going to do it. But I might still not hate it. My Lord hates it. He hates sin. Do I feel the same way about it? 9:10. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. The wise want to know more about the Holy One. They want to know more about their God. Now, two more for you. He who walks in his uprightness fears the Lord. He who is perverse in his ways despises him. The fear of the Lord is a fountain of life to turn one away from the snares of death. Those who fear God have more abundant life, even in this life, certainly in eternity. Let's look at one last one together, and then we'll close. Proverbs 23, verses 17 and 18. Do not let your heart envy sinners, but be zealous for the fear of the Lord all the day. For surely there is a hereafter, and your hope will not be cut off. There is a danger. We look at the world, we see it every day. Think about it, we see what's going on in it. And we may convince ourselves, you know what? The sinner's got it pretty good. Man, look at all the stuff they have. Look at all the things they get to do. They don't have to worry about conscience nagging at them. They just do whatever they want. And here the warning is, don't do it. Don't do it. It's not what it seems. It's not what it seems. Even if the sinner goes through this life getting all of his stuff, and I doubt that, There are going to be things. There are always going to be empty spots in his heart where the Lord should be. There's always going to be these issues. But even let's say he went all the way through and everything just went his way. What happens when the Son of God is seated on his throne and passes judgment against him for what he did and what he didn't do? Then what does the money mean? What does the title mean? What does all the pleasure and all the stuff mean? In eternity, that's a long time to think about the stuff I messed up on. For surely there's a hereafter, and your hope will not be cut off. That is, if you're zealous for the Lord. As we get our songbooks out, think about this last question. Our priorities, are they spiritual or are they worldly? Let's get ready to sing. I doubt any of us want to be a fool. I can't imagine anybody does. The great thing about it is we get to decide. I don't have to be. You don't have to be. We'll make the decision. What are we going to make tonight? If we can help in any way, if you need to repent, if you need the prayers of the saints, if you need to obey the gospel, let us help you with that tonight. Please come as we stand and sing.